big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a beautiful way. Do you know what Allah says? He says that life's a big, big test. He says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a beautiful way.
Indeed, Islam is a beautiful way of life. It is complete and absolutely amazing. It's subhanAllah, it's a gift from Allah for whoever understands and knows this. You know that, you know peace. You're welcome to Everyday Muslim live on WFM 91.7. My name is Amina Adams. I'm in the driver's seat today, and it's going to be a beautiful ride all the way till 12 noon, inshallah ta'ala. Grab your seats. Today's episode is something that is close to my heart, and the person is someone that is my, you know, lovely buddy from forever. So you want to right now send a message across all your social media platforms, tell all your friends and family members to get on board, because this is gonna be a sweet ride. It's a memory you'll keep forever. Today's topic, teenagers deen, and it comes on the back of so many things happening in our society today, and case in hand, subhanAllah, you do remember the case of the bully that happened in Abuja, and a lot of us were thinking, how did that happen, how did that get there, and all of that, inshallah ta'ala. We'll talk about that and many more on the show today. My guest, we bring you only the best of the best of the best. Amina Yunus Ali is a dedicated and certified professional with a multifaceted background in the fields of family therapy, performance consulting, and neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. Her extensive expertise enables her to employ therapeutic techniques to support clients in identifying and healing unresolved childhood traumas, navigating the complexities of grief, and overcoming psychological barriers that hinder the pursuit of a healthy lifestyle. Amina stands as a distinguished master practitioner and holds a prominent role on the management board of the Institute of Family Systems Engineering and Development. She is an active member of the esteemed network of family systems engineering professionals, where she contributes her wealth of knowledge and experience. Furthermore, Amina is a certified mediator, having received her accreditation from the International Mediation Campus in Germany. Her specialization lies in the field of family mediation, where she excels in facilitating constructive resolutions within family dynamics. She has also been inducted as a fellow and a member of faculty of the Chartered Institute of Professional Mentoring and Coaching here in Nigeria. Something else you don't know about Amina, she can carry the body of a grandma. But you see that sweetheart, she's soulfully youthful. She remains locked in her teenage years, and she's the best friend your teenagers can have. I call her the mouthpiece of the kids. Anyways, Amina Yunus, assalamu alaikum. You're welcome.
Wa alaikum assalamu alaikum barakatuh.
How are you this morning?
Thank you so much for having me. I am doing fine. I didn't even know you were going to be comparing the show today.
So all right, let's just get cracking.
Let's get started.
Amina, what are some prevalent challenges and social issues that today's teenagers are grappling with?
From my small space in the world, I would say that the fundamental thing that teenagers, adolescents are grappling with right now is the effect of being mismanaged, underappreciated, undervalued, and that will translate into them feeling unnoticed, feeling under pressure to become suddenly, however way which sometimes would also backfire in misbehavior or behavioral challenges, and then emotional redundancies, mental health struggles, and I could go on and on. To wrap it up, basically, it's to say that today's teenagers are facing a lot more unseen challenges than when we were growing up. They are facing a lot more unseen and intense pressure right now to fight to be seen, to know that they matter than we were growing up. So this is something that, you know, continues to affect every other aspect of their lives, whether it's a self-esteem and being able to identify the goals of who they want to be in the future, whether it is about being able to academically thrive or, you know, just mentally and socially be well adjusted in the society. And it's just, it's so sad to see and to constantly see that fight. It's like enormous for them.
Wow. Right. So what would you say the responsibilities of parents and guardians, what exactly, what roles do they play in guiding teenagers through this crucial period of development?
Yeah, I think for parents and guardians, is to number one, recognize that even though this adolescent, this teenager that you see, who may be as tall as you or taller than you, is still a child. Is trying to understand who they are and what they stand for, why they exist in the first instance. So our job as their guardians and as their parents is to lean into that struggle with them, not against them, not to forcibly force them to like grow up when they are not ready, when they don't even understand what they're growing up to and why. Right? And our job is to lean into that struggle and to encourage them, to be present for them, to wholesomely guide them and protect them. Because, you see, the adolescent period is the age where we misunderstand that their need to be out there, to be socially known, means that we need to step back. Actually, it is that we as the parents need to step in, step with, step for them, so that they don't feel alone, they don't feel neglected, they don't feel like, well, I'm not an adult, I can do anyhow, I can decide anything. And that will mean that there is no consequence for whatever it is that they're doing. No, it means that, you know, even though you are looking like an adult, there's still a lot of growing up to do internally. Right. And that internal struggle, that internal conflict of sometimes I just want to go to mommy and hug her and to cry and say school was hard today. And sometimes I just want mommy to trust me that when I say I'm going out with my friends or we are going to the mall, that I'm going to be okay. You know, I know enough of our family values to decide that this is not for me or this is what I want to do. And I know enough that even when I make a mistake, I can come back home and say, I'm sorry, I did this. I know it is not what you would expect of me, but, you know, I'm willing to do better. So it's that constant struggle and that constant conflict of one time being a child, another time being a grown-up, that as parents and guardians, we need to recognize and to be able to lean into the dynamics effectively and to help them see that, you know what, whoever you are at any different point in time, I'm going to be there for you. I'm going to be the stable provider of encouragement, of conscientiousness, of discipline and boundaries, and as well as compassion, because I'm going to be compassionate to your mistakes. It's not like I was holy when I was growing up. You know, that were you. We made a lot of mistakes that some, even our parents, didn't know till date. So if that is the case, then we have to know that even for our children, we cannot lead with fear. We have to lead with a lot more faith. We have to recognize the struggle faster than they are recognizing it and be like the bumper, the buffer, that says, you know, when you fall, I'm going to be here and you can follow me.
Exactly, actually, because we've been there before, we've walked those shoes before. You know, speaking of which, so what I hear is a lot is coming from a place of, I'm thinking, you have to have put something in for to be able to give. You can't give what you don't have. So how does education during the teenage years prepare these beautiful individuals for adulthood, both academically, you know, emotionally and spiritually? And I'm asking this, and you know, in my, the image coming to my mind right now is the image of the slaps that I saw flying back and forth on that, you know, the video that broke the internet during the bullying that happened in Abuja. And all the all that was on my mind, you see that girl that was receiving the slap, that is typical me. I would not lift a finger, I wouldn't flinch. And I just kept on thinking, how did they miss it with that girl, the bully? You know, I was more empathetic towards the bully because I just couldn't imagine what was going through her mind. And I kept on thinking, oh, when this is all over, you know, your band told you about your car, you know, what then starts to go through her mind? Who failed her? How did we miss it?
You know, when I look back to that video, one thing that came, I remember the first time I saw it, I was just like, bullies are not born, they are made. Bullies are not born, they are made. Bullies are not born, they are made. So from the bullying part of the video is to recognize that this child also needs help. Just as intensely as the child who was super shocked and frozen in the trauma of what she was experiencing in that moment in time. And if we can, you know, I'm an objective observer, I can see this. If I were a parent who is a parent of either one of those girls, in my mind, I'm looking at myself and looking at the situation, and I'm asking myself, how is this society judging me? Did I do well enough? And this is where a lot of parents are stuck in. Like, we parent for the society and not for our children. We parent for our children to be socially acceptable, but not internally adjusted and appreciated for themselves. So you see the bully who, you know, when I watched it again and again, then I got a little bit of context that this was about a boy, whether or not she was at heartbroken or something, and she was beating the girl because of that. For me, it's like, this is a girl screaming for attention. This is a girl that, you know, has been used to getting attention by violence. This is a girl who believes that the only, or who has grown up even in a surrounding where it is possibly that she was even bullied herself. And we need to ask ourselves, so what is the bullying culture of most schools? Well, apart from the policies that we are now hammering that schools should develop an effective policy, the schools first need to evaluate, what is the culture of bullying? Do we have situations where it is so easy for administrators to bully teachers? Do we have a situation where teachers are being bullied by the students themselves or the parents of students themselves? What is the bullying culture that allows for people to believe that it is only through violence that they can express themselves? That is one. Now, on the flip side is to look at the young girl, Nantira, who was also bullied herself and was frozen. And I look for like, she's so composed, she's so composed. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is so much pain. She is so dissociated that she doesn't even have the words or the method of protecting herself. Because if you notice, she wasn't hyperventilating, she wasn't doing anything, she was just like,
she was frozen. You used the right word. She was frozen. She was gone. She was, it was just her body.
And that is a trauma response. And the next thing that came to my mind, like, this is not the first time. Apart from it happening in school, this is not the first situation where she's found herself unable to respond, because to dissociate from an environment where I feel unsafe and threatened would is better. And to, she's most likely casting fantasies and pretending like she's in Paris or Canada just to get her mind away from her body, even though her body is feeling the pain at that moment in time. And this must have happened not once, not twice. This must have happened over a period of time where she's learned and mastered that craft of dissociating and freezing when something terrible such as that happens. And I then asked, where are her parents? What's going on here? Who are her guardians?
Who are her caregivers? Who's responsible for her?
Who's responsible for her? And you see, that question you asked about what we need to do about education, I think more importantly is parents to recognize that, look, nothing has prepared us as much. Nothing has prepared us well enough to face the kind of onslaught and noise and pain and societal misgivings that our children are facing. So we need to go back to school so we educate ourselves of what it means to be a child. Some adults didn't even have a safe background. They didn't have a safe home when we were growing up. Mm-hmm. And we could say, oh, God, I lived through it. I'm an adult now. And my goal is to do better for my children. But you see, there are five laws of parenting, one of which I know is that you parent the way you were parented until and unless you decide to parent differently.
You have to be intentional. You have to go out of your way to say, I want to be different.
Exactly. You parent the way you are parented until and unless you decide to do better. Means that you have to not just think it. You have to find the strategies that work. You have to know the child that you have been gifted with. You have to recognize that, look, my child is not living my story. She's going to live her own story, but I have to be prepared for the story that the world will say about her or him. I have to be prepared to nurture, to protect, to educate, to involve, to engage this child on a platform that makes her a wholesome, responsible, well-adjusted individual as she's growing up, as he's growing up. And this means that you have to get educated yourself. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of things about child development that we are leaving fallow. There's a lot about child development that we are assuming that, oh, well, nature will take its course. And nature does take its course, but just not where we want it to go. Nature definitely, you know, drives our children because they are like pullings that the wind is blowing wherever and whenever. And that is the fact of life. That is the society that we are in. The noises, oh, you know, today is a stretch where tomorrow it is, you know, there's so much noise that they're having to decipher, who am I? What am I doing here? Why do I matter? You know, and the more we believe that it is how the society dictates who our children to be, that they would continue to push them towards, then the more we fail to recognize that we, and each, this is the second law of parenting, we are the custodians of the society's heritage. Huh. The things that we are saying in the society today is as a result of how we chose to live our lives and began to decide that this is what is socially acceptable. We are the ones that form the society. We are the ones that decide for the society that this is acceptable. Huh. And this is how it goes on and on and on and on. So if there's anything education does, it is, so for number one, help parents open their eyes to the huge, not impossible task of creating a better future for the children. And perhaps not this children that we have right now, the generations that we are yet to see, more especially. It is also for us to recognize that education, number one, starts from the home, it starts within the home. The parent's marriage is the first
teacher
of education that the child will begin to understand human interaction and engagement. The way the parents are in their marriage, how loving or unloving, how volatile or plain or bland or harmonious that marriage is, informs the child of human interaction, human engagement, human communication, human involvement. And this is what they carry into the society. So as they're growing into adolescence and are beginning to think that, oh, you're making certain mistakes, you've got to have to ask yourself, like, what's within me that I've given this child to be, to do better? This is not to blame you, but perhaps we should begin to evaluate, right? But it is for us to also begin to say there are adjustments we need to make here.
Right.
So many children out there have been parentified, and parentification basically means that because we think that they are responsible children, quote unquote, they go to school, they get straight A's, they are the volleyball captain, they are the straight, they are in the
Sis, I'm going to have to interrupt you. There's a caller. Let's take this call, please. Hello, good morning, salamu alaikum. Hello. You're through to the studio. Your name and where you're calling from. All right, let's go ahead. Amina, please go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, I was saying that just because we think that they are thriving academically and similarly socially, we assume that that's the end of, you know, what we need. Some of them, they are so scared of disappointing their parents, so they are A-listers. They will do everything that you want. But on the flip side, there is the unattended alter ego that is there And this is where you begin to find the issues of substance abuse, resource abuse, such as porn addiction, and you begin to find the influences overriding their conscious values, influences of peers, influences of the media, social media, you know, driving their decisions rather than the values that you thought should be effective enough to protect them and to prevent them from doing things that are wrong. But really, it is about, you know, I want to fit in. The adolescent, the typical teenager, the most important question in life is, I want to fit in. I want society to accept me. I want to feel like, you know, and it is not wrong. This is how in the olden days, in the days of our great-grandfathers and grandmothers, this is how the people who are good in war, the warriors were selected. This is how the people who are good jurisprudently were selected. People who are good homemakers, this is how they were selected. People who are good cultural or storytellers, this is how they were selected. We notice by the affirmation of how their peers gravitated towards them. And we put them in different segments and all that. And then we built them on that. But what happened when we became civilized, we became uncultured. The more civilized we were, we became, the more uncultured we became. We began to lose our heritage, began to lose our culture, began to lose the fundamentals of, you know, what makes us human, what makes us whole, what makes us well adjusted. Wow. Right? And that just keeps going on for these children. And the greatest, and that's why I said the most terrible thing that they're working against is the affect of how we have chosen to become adults in life. And so everything that a teenager does or says is driven towards source. Okay, I want my voice to be heard. It's driven towards, it's my life, or you only live once, YOLO. You know, go on social media, rant against the 45-year-old, you don't care whether that person is old enough to be your grandparent. You know, just to say over and over again, I've got a voice, I've got a body, I've got a soul, and I matter. And this because, again, the home is unstable, the parents are distracted, the teachers are distracted, we only see results as validation.
Wow. So, man, this is deep. This is deep. And I know you broached the topic on peer pressure and social media, but then in more graphical terms and more graphical ways, how do this really impact the behavior of these teenagers?
A lot. When your child is around 3 to 10, there-ish, they are thinking about how to please you, right? They are thinking about, what does mommy want? What does daddy want? I've got a six-year-old. I just constantly ask him, mommy, are you proud of me? I did this today. Mommy, are you proud of me? And that is a pretty good age for you to feel good as a parent, because you know they are coming back to you. No matter how much war or troubles that they go through in school, whether it's friendship wars or academics or anything, they always come back home and hope that they'll have a parent that says, oh, how are you? How are you feeling? And things like that. And they feel safe in that. But you see, that begins to change when they begin to notice that their entire life is not about their parents. And that is what we would want, naturally, because they begin to notice that, oh, there is somebody that dresses and talks in a certain way that I feel like, you know, I can also do the same.
I'm drawn towards this person based on this thing.
Yeah, right, you know, and they're feeling like, you know, I can begin to, you know, aspire to more than what my parents are right now. And it's a good thing, right? Looking for peers, you know, being involved in peership is a great thing. I mean, we as parents as well, you know, we know
that associates.
We know that what makes us feel validated is when our friends look at us and say, girl, you've got this. I really like the way you're doing this. Mm-hmm. We feel good when we hear that. Not just because this person is someone that knows us, but this person is not our immediate family. Mm-hmm. If your family says that to you, you'll feel that, well, it's your job for you to say you are proud of me. You're biased, right? Because it's your job to love me. But if, when somebody outside who very rarely knows you looks at you and says, wow, well done, I'm really proud of you, you feel good about it. And that is the way our teenagers also feel. This is what is driving them to want to belong to certain peership. But you see, no matter how well-raised your child is going to meet several other children that may not be well-raised or may, you know, they may be flaunting how well-raised they are. And this is where the challenge is, because the more they mix, the more they begin to wonder, what is the right way to live life? How do we engage life in such a way that, you know, we are not boring and we are not bored? How do we live life in such a way that, you know, everybody looks at us and they're like, wow, that's cool, that's good, you know, that's rad, or whatever slang is the in thing at that moment in time. And that is the direction of, you know, encouraging peership in the right way, is to notice what surrounding or what choices am I surrounding my child with? What kind of school am I sending them to? It's okay if you send your child to Islamia school, or you send your child to, you know, a faith-based school. But you see, that faith-based school is made up of humans, not robots. They are not just going to decide to be good because it is bearing an Islamia name or a faith-based name. They are going to react or act based on what they've learned from home. So it always comes back to what the home has prepared for peer influence. How does my child discern how to cope with uncomfortable conversations? How has my child been brought up to recognize that her no is valid even when it is not popular? How has my child been able to comfortably stay in a place? But you see, case in point, a child wants to, you're planning a party in a restaurant. Your teenager comes to you and says, "Mommy, I don't feel like going." And you're like, "Ah, this is for the family. It's important for you to go. Everybody must go." You have invariably taught the child that it is what is popular and what everybody is doing that must be done. And not what, because you haven't even taken the time out to ask
why.
We haven't even brought them up to own their voice. So when my daughter is arguing with me and I'm listening and I'm saying, thank you for telling me your opinion, I'm also encouraging her to be able to say, well, I mean, recently she came, I picked her up from school, and right there beside her teacher, she was telling me that somebody did something and everything. And I was listening intently to her. And her teacher was looking at me like, ooh, okay. You know, any other parent may have dismissed, like, oh, no, don't let's talk about it now. But in that moment, what she was saying to me mattered, and I made it known. And I actually asked the teacher that, okay, is there a program for this? Is there some way we can attend to this? Because this is how we help them know that their voice matters. This is how we begin to teach them that when their peers are telling them, oh, let's go do 911, for instance.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you what that
certain means. Vices, yeah.
Right? And for them, they're able to say, well, you know, I don't feel like it. And they're not feeling any way about it, like, oh, I'm going to be left alone or fear of missing out, FOMO. No, they're going to feel like, well, this is me, and I'm cool with that. Because at home, they are cool with that. They are cool with when it is not popular, my parents listen. When it's not popular, my parents...
I think there's a network glitch, but if you're just tuning in, you are live on WFM. It is Everyday Muslim, the beautiful program that comes to stimulate your, you know, your whole system ahead of a new week. It's where we learn the deen in the simplest of forms. And today we are looking at our teenagers, deen, teach your child the way of the Lord, and when he grows up, he will not depart from it. And so we're learning from the experts how best to handhold our teenagers into adulthood. And our guest today is Amina Yunus Ali. She's an NLP practitioner. She's an expert in the family coaching field. She's a family re-engineering developmentalist, and you know, she's got a lot of feathers to her hat. I'll just hang in here and wait for her to rejoin us. We have a bit of a network crisis ongoing. She's joining us virtually, and that's how come the conversation came to a halt. If you'd like to be... Oh, perfect. Sweetheart, you're back. We lost you for a few seconds. Hello, Amina. The network is still playing a fast one on me. All right. Anyways, I'll just hang in here patiently. Do hang in there patiently as well. We are hoping that things get straightened up in the space somewhere in the metaverse so that we can hear the conversation. We've been talking about teenagers, Dean. We did refer to the bullying case that happened in Abuja, trying to make sense of it all from the expert's perspective. She's a family coach.
No, but it's still going to be old news. Just like the case of the Oromani case last year, and there was a case before that. Bullying was going to happen because...
We do apologize for this technical challenges that we're facing. Incidentally, she's still talking, subhanAllah. However, anyways, we'll get back on track. And so, like I was saying, the teenager's deen is what we're looking at today. And basically, we're hoping that parents can review their relationships with their children, where they got it wrong, how, what parenting style they're adopting. If there's need to go for trainings and learnings, please do not feel ashamed, do not hesitate, so we don't fail the society by releasing failed children on them. And so there's a lot of responsibility on the shoulders of parents, guardians, teachers, caregivers in all totality. We need to be intentional about raising and churning out good children. It's not rocket science, right? It's not, we weren't born with it, right? We need to learn it. So, keep trying to have Amina back. Unfortunately, believe it or not, she's still talking to us right now, but we can't hear her, so we'll try other means to get across to her, inshallah. And so if you do have your questions, please get it ready. We'll open the phone lines and you can be a part of the show. Tell us what your thoughts are. Do you, any of the things that she has said, does it resonate with you? Are you struggling with any of your teenagers at the moment? We have a caller. Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Hello.
Hello, caller.
Are you Muslim?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Your name and where you're calling us from, sir?
I'm Yusuf Olamilekan Adedeyan. I'm calling from Alakokoya, Lagos.
All right, sir. Your contribution, please keep it short, so that we still have a lot of questions for our guests.
Okay. I just want to add to it that most times you discover that our parents, most of them, is like they don't have the knowledge that children feel that they should be equipped with. Right. So most children do feel that they are more exposed than their parents in terms of religious knowledge and Western knowledge.
Right.
So it's always difficult for most parents to be able to have total control of their children these days.
Okay.
Yes, because a situation where a child is telling the parent that, no, this is how things are not done. This is how it should be done. And really, that is how it should be done, because the child has gotten a lot of exposure, as in religious knowledge. So maybe she has gone to madrasa and learned new things.
Mm-hmm.
So there is always contradiction.
Yeah.
But what I think is that when the child is has gotten the right knowledge, especially religious knowledge, they will be able to cooperate with the parents and do the right thing.
Right.
Yes. So the way the children will now be telling the parents that this is what is en vogue, it will not be. It will not be offensive.
Right.
So.
Right.
So you're welcome. Thank you. I'm enjoying the program.
Thank you so much for your contribution, Mr. Yusuf. Jazakumullah khairan. Yeah, so if you're just joining us, it is Everyday Muslim live on WFM. Number to call to be a part of the show, 07000-917-917. We have been chatting with Amina Yunus Ali. She is a family life coach. And she's been schooling us technically. She's been schooling us. Amina, we have you back. Assalamu alaikum.
Hello,
Amina. So sorry, we experienced a bit of a glitch. I'm so sorry. Yes, please We had a caller who was just basically sharing his own perspective about the, you know, difference that can happen when we send our children to madrasa. Are you there, Amina?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes.
I'm
here. So we send our children to madrasa. They are ahead of us in knowledge. So there's a knowledge gap because we didn't go to the madrasa. We send the children. So they get knowledge and they come back home and they are schooling us and we are having this kind of clashes, basically. And so that was just his own perspective. So we've got to find a middle course where we relate better with each other based on those kind of knowledge gaps. So please, you were sharing something about the last time I heard you did refer to the other case of bullying and you were sharing an insight about it. That's when I lost you.
Okay. Yeah. I lost you because the call dropped.
Yes.
And the last thing I heard was about a friend who was trying to share his own experience or his own perspective about his lockdown school and how that plays into how the children feel they know better than us.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, can you just refresh a bit so I know what you're saying to that?
Okay, so okay, actually, let me do it this way, so that we are on the same page. We are going to be out of time anytime soon, so I want us to move to another perspective. We have identified quite a number of issues, back and forth, around how we have parented all along, right? Can you please provide some practical strategies for our teenagers to maintain a strong spiritual foundation and so that they remain rooted in their faith while pursuing higher education and career objectives, particularly the secular or diverse setting? And I know, so this question basically is because we have identified up till this point things that led to the seeming vices that we see in society and the bad behaviors that we see. So how can we help them? Okay, I mean, I'm going to try and reconnect again. The network was very, the audio was very poor. And sincere apologies to all of our listeners. I know you are enjoying it, and I am also enjoying it. But subhanAllah, we plan. Allah is the best of planners. We will make this right, inshallah. So basically, I'm hoping that when she comes back, she can share practical experience with us, practical strategies for our teenagers. And I hope you are going to take notes as parents so that we can work together. There's nothing wrong when our kids come back home and we sit down and say we need to have a meeting. Let's have a family time. If you need help, call for help. Ask for help. Actually, she's a family therapy specialist. You know, she's happy to engage the entire family and, you know, give you solutions whatever you're going through. So I would say reach out to us at WFM, reach out to us at MPAC, Muslim Public Affairs Centers. Go to our website and contact us and say you want to get access to our guest. And we will happily do that, because at the end of the day, if we have beautiful, stable families, then...
I'm back.
Okay, Amina, you're back. Thank you. So I was just saying, before you answer my question... Yeah, I can hear you. I was just saying to people that if they need help, they should ask for help. They should cry out. You are a family... Can you hear me? Hello, Amina, can you hear me? I can hear you. Can you hear me? I can hear you, Amina. Can you hear me? Oh, okay. We'll try to reconnect again, but if you can hear me now, you can go ahead and speak.
Okay, all right. So, I was talking about the strategies that the adolescent or the teenagers can actually employ to remain rooted in their faith in spite of the noise out there. I think number one is for them to get to know their dream for themselves, not because they are doing it for a parent or anybody, it is for themselves first. So get comfortable in recognizing that they are a person, they are a soul for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that they learn is for their own benefit, for their own good.
and they should get curious about God. Who is God to them? How do they engage or connect with Him? You know, it's one thing for you to pray your 5 times in this solar, but you're just doing the motion and not really connecting fully. That can have an adverse effect on your mental stability. Because at the point you get to that stage where, what am I doing then? Am I not feeling anything? Right? So, if it is the magistrate that you're going in, be curious about the picture. Try to connect with it from a point of view. How does this speak to you personally? And what can you take from me? What are the lessons? Why, one of my favorite teachers will tell me that each time you read the Quran, you have to take 2 things. The first is, what is the lesson this is teaching me? And what is the instruction? So 3 things. What is the instruction that I'm supposed to take out from me? And number 3, what is this teaching me about God and what and who I want Him to be to me? So it is remembering that verse and trying to buckle up what it says, and to myself as a think of me, you know. So when you put that in at the forefront of your engagement with God, with Allah, it makes it easier for you to engage from a perspective of, I want to walk towards my own person, becoming a whole person, not just because my parents are paying my mother's fees or in front or making me want to do this for anybody. No, it is because of me and getting close to God, and getting familiar with God on a level that suits my personality. And I think this is also the point where I begin to encourage parents to help them, speak to them of God in a way they believe that God is merciful. Show them that mercy that Allah Subhanahu consistently says that my mercy outweighs my wrath. Such that even when they make mistakes, you engage from a point of mercy first before you begin to correct or lash out with pain and consequences for their mistake.
Right.
Engage with mercy because we are the first reflection of how any higher authority is to our children. And if we can't be merciful, they definitely may not find it hard to believe that God is merciful as well. So that is the strategy that I have parents and teachers.
Thank you so much, Amina. And then, obviously, we cannot leave the society out. We have established the fact that, you know, a child is raised by the parents, the guardians, the teachers, and, of course, the society at large. How can society better support these teenagers in their journey to adulthood, considering the various socioeconomic backgrounds and cultural contexts?
That's a
large one. All right.
I would say that the way the society can help is to respect that every child is valuable as a human. So you don't chastise, judge, make a child feel like they are the worst of the worst by what they have done. If we can pardon criminal or find a criminal for adults for their needs, right? So I think it is, you know, recognizing as a society that we have an unequal and unavoidable essence, or I don't even know the word. We owe it to these children to treat them as different. We owe it to them to treat them like they are valuable.
Right.
Like they are valuable parts of the society. And we owe it to them to teach them, even if we are missing certain things in our own childhood, to teach them to connect better, to educate, to protect, to preserve, to enjoy and enjoy them. I just say Christmas, but just to make them believe they are religious, right? This song is coming to my head. I think it's Christian, isn't it? Before mission, we expect that children are only deserving of love when they do good. But how about we see from the point of view that every child is deserving of love? Because the future of every child is actually love. Mm. The future of every child is actually mercy. The future of our life bestowed on every human soul before we can be changed or maligned as a result of our circumstances, of the people that are raising us up, is actually to be careful. And children need to be cared for. Children need to be cared for. And I think that's what the parents need to begin to pay attention to care for these children, wholly and wholesomely.
Great. I did hype you in the beginning that you are the mouthpiece of teenagers. So let's tune into the teenagers now and find help for them, you know, within. So what strategies might teenagers employ to strike a balance between their religious obligations and academic or even social pressures?
The first strategy is to start off on a place of you are wonderful and you are amazing. There is no one person like you. Even if you're a tween, it's just to recognize that everything about you is unique, from the tip of your toes to the strength of your head. Everything about you is unique. The reason you're created for this world, in this world, is actually intricate and unique also. It is defined for you. Your purpose, yes, is to worship God. And in that is to recognize how to thrive academically, how to choose purposefully. But it's also to recognize that you are solving it for you. You are a solution provider.
Mm-hmm.
So bring on many of the ills that this society, this world has. And it is in recognizing that, that you can actually begin to know that there is no breath that you take that is wasted.
Hmm.
There is no journey that you take that is wasted. Even if you don't like chemistry and mathematics and your friends are insisting that they are the next medical doctor of their generation, it's okay. Come back and know that even this hard period is serving for you to become something greater in the future. Always remember the story of Prophet Yusuf, and to know that even when the home was tough and he was sold into slavery, he came back. He came out as a king at the end of the day.
Right,
and that is who you are. You're joining our never had and difficult years. Is to start on that point of view that Allah created me, and to own that with your whole chest and say that because you're a creation of Allah, there is a reason for why you're created, and you continue to look forward to that. And you do that whether you're trying to read literature, or you're trying to engage in your solar, or you're trying to do the swimming successfully. You're talking to your peers. You're always coming back to that fact. You are a creation of Allah. You are a masterpiece. And there's a reason why He wants you in this world.
Absolutely.
And you're going to spend your life trying to find God out.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Amina. On a final note, what advice would you give to teenagers who are currently struggling to connect with their faith or feel disconnected from their religious community? What would you say to them?
Okay, so I'll start with them by sharing my story. I also had struggles with my dream. Like, you know, there was a point I was asking, why all the rituals? Why do we have to pray for Thanksgiving? Why do we have to fast, you know, when I see my friends who are not fasting, you know? But it always comes back. I think one of the things that helped me the most was the curiosity which I engaged in trying to learn the names of Allah. And to try to find out more about who this higher power is for myself and how I relate to him is to basically just want to feel like I matter in this world. So if you are struggling in your life, number one, know that you are not alone. Number two, know that Allah hears. But even if it is just that you sit down one day and you say, Ya Allah, please open the path of your mercy for me so I know more about you. And then he begins to bring people into your life who begins to teach you of who he is, of how he is to you, and how valuable you are as a servant to him. And that can just make it, it can make the whole difference between who you were struggling with in the beginning and how you begin to find it comfortable to either wear your hijab or your scarf, or to pay your 5 times the libra consistently, or to continue to just do your scarf more connectedly. So it is really first having that discussion with your lawyer. Secondly, look out for people who remind you about that. You know, ask questions. Even when clients are forcing you to do something or to say something, ask questions. One, if you feel like the answer that they did is not enough, that's okay.
Right.
And then find other people who will know more and be meeting in different ways. And that will make all the difference as well. And then number three, as much as peers are important, as friends are important, it is also to know that the type of friends that you work with reflect your most and most desires. So if you are with friends who berate you, who do not value your opinion, or who are always talking things that you know intimately that this may be wrong, then they don't value you, and they are not with you. They are pressured. And that's what peer pressure means, really. Mm. So this is the time for you to actually find friends who you feel comfortable with, who you can learn and grow with, and who can get curious as well about the doing of Allah as well. And that will also help you a lot. And number four is, your parents might not always have the answers that you want, but they will always have the answers that you need. So give them a break. Trust them, right? And they know that everything is going to be okay at the end of the day.
Amina, thank you so much for this soulful chat you had with us. May Allah bless you. May Allah increase your knowledge and wisdom. May Allah expand your coasts for you. This is a gift that you have given us. We do not take it for granted. May Allah accept it from you as, you know, an act of worship and make it weigh heavy on your scale of good deeds. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We'd love to have you again, inshallah. I'm sure we will find time to get you back. Jazakumullah khairan. To all of our listeners, may Allah bless you for tuning in. Thank you so much for being a part of it. I sincerely apologize for the hiccup we had along the line. We wished it didn't happen, but it happened, subhanAllah. So may Allah forgive all of us. Thank you for being patient with us. We'll see you same time next week when we bring you another beautiful package of Everyday Muslim. A big thank you to the entire crew that has helped us running Helter Skelter to make sure we continued to give you a beautiful show. Thank you so much, sis. We'll see you next week, inshallah. My name is Amina Adams. Masalam.
Turned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a beautiful way. Upon he, Muhammad, the messenger of Allah.